This episode is brought to you by Tegas, the only investment research platform built for fundamental investors. Think about how hard you are working to get the insights you need to make a great investment decision, how many hours you spend digging through public records and expert transcripts, or manually updating those complex models. Investors should compete on their ability to analyze investments, not how well they aggregate data. That's why Tegas offers a unified end-to-end research platform that combines robust qualitative content sets, up-to-date financial data, management and culture checks, and more, all in one easy-to-use, streamlined user experience. 95% of the top 20 global private equity firms use Tegas. Learn more and get your free trial at tegas.com/Patrick.
This is Business Breakdowns. Business Breakdowns is a series of conversations with investors and operators diving deep into a single business. For each business, we explore its history, its business model, its competitive advantages, and what makes it tick. We believe every business has lessons and secrets that investors and operators can learn from, and we are here to bring them to you. To find more episodes of Breakdowns, check out joincolossus.com.
All opinions expressed by hosts and podcast guests are solely their own opinions. Hosts, podcast guests, their employers, or affiliates may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
This is Matt Russell, and today we are breaking down a giant in the medical device space, Intuitive Surgical. If you're looking for examples of how the world is a better place today, look no further than surgical procedures. Intuitive's Da Vinci system is a pioneer in this area, and it specifically reduces the invasiveness of surgery and reduces the burden on surgeons themselves. To break down Intuitive, I'm joined by Joe Thomas, analyst at the investment manager 91. Joe walks us through the history of surgical procedures, and it's quite a history, depending on how far you want to go back, the emergence of robotics and surgery, and how Intuitive has emerged as the winner in the space. Please enjoy this breakdown on Intuitive Surgical. Okay, Joe, excited to break down Intuitive Surgical today. At the time that we are recording, $140 billion market cap business, sitting at all-time highs, actually, at this moment in time. But until you sent it across via email, it wasn't a name that I knew of, certainly wasn't familiar with. So I thought maybe we could just start with a simple introduction to Intuitive Surgical and how you would describe them to those that aren't familiar with the business.
Intuitive Surgical make robots. These robots are called Da Vinci systems, and they're used to perform surgical procedures. Specifically, they're used to do surgery in a minimally invasive way, and they're used mostly for procedures in the abdomen. Intuitive also make surgical instruments, and those are used alongside these robots. They're the dominant player in robotic surgery, with essentially 100% market share for this type of surgery.
I can imagine that this portion of the market has been growing, and I want to touch on the history shortly, but can you just give us a sense of how big of a market robotic surgery is today?
Sizing the total surgical market is tricky, and it relies on amalgamating quite a few different sources. There's somewhere in the order of 200 to 300 million total procedures, broadly, performed annually worldwide. Almost 10% of that is soft tissue surgery, and that's what's relevant for Intuitive Surgical. Within those, about 7 million procedures are currently in the addressable market. Those are procedures where robotic surgery has approvals and it makes sense economically to use robotics. If we zoom down to where robotics are currently being used, that's just over 2 million procedures done on Da Vinci systems in 2023.
And can you bring us back in time? I can imagine 100 years ago, 200 years ago, there was surgery being done, sometimes without any type of anesthetics, sometimes without very clean tools. So wherever you want to start in terms of the evolution of the surgical market, I'll leave that up to you. But it would be good to just get some history, particularly as robotic surgical operations started coming into play as well.
So if you go back really far, 5,000 years, you've got procedures like trepanning are the oldest known surgeries. And I put that in inverted commas. And amazingly, you see some evidence of healings. Some patients survived the procedure of having a hole drilled in their skull. And then you had other procedures performed in ancient Greece, setting broken bones and things. By the 10th century, you got some evidence and writings of orthopedics and ENT. But essentially, before the 19th century, as you've alluded to, the introduction of anesthetics and antiseptics, surgery was a horrifying prospect for patients, a high likelihood of infection and death, not to mention the patient was conscious during the operation. So they really knew what was going on. If you read some of the contemporaneous accounts of 19th century surgery, it's really something else. And this meant that surgery was mostly limited to what you'd call external procedures. So that's amputations and treating wounds. And then if you fast forward to the 20th century, this is when people began more widely accepting germ theory and you had more antiseptic measures. And this enabled the more modern era of surgery. So that included the ability to perform longer, more complicated internal procedures. And internal procedures on organs in the abdomen is where we'll focus, as this is Intuitive's core area. So if you think about those procedures in the abdomen, soft tissue surgery, there are two broad camps there. You've got open surgery or minimally invasive. Now, open involves quite a large incision in the patient so that the surgeon has got access to the full surgical site, direct access to the area in question, and great visibility. The drawbacks are that the patient has a painful recovery. They've got a long healing process, not just from the internal procedure, but from the big incision in their abdomen. And this is accompanied with a higher risk of infection, larger scars, disfigurement, and so forth. Minimally invasive surgery involves making a small incision or multiple incisions in some parts of the abdomen. And the surgeon puts an endoscope through this keyhole incision. Some people will be familiar with the keyhole terminology. So they put an endoscope in to see what's going on, as well as the instruments that they're going to use to carry out the procedure. And this solves a lot of the drawbacks of open surgery. The patient recovery is faster, the chance of infection is lower. And this technique is known as laparoscopic surgery, or LAP surgery for short. The first procedure like this was done in 1910, and there was quite a bit of development through the 1950s, 60s, and 70s especially, but it wasn't until the early 80s that it started being documented. And then in the 1990s, LAP techniques were seeing rapid adoption because this is what patients preferred, this is what surgeons preferred, and it was all well covered by the media. It's not all perfect, however. There are some drawbacks to LAP surgery. Dexterity is a huge challenge. If you try and visualize holding an 18-inch long steel tool, which passes through this hole in the patient's skin, the size of a dime or a fivepence piece, the surgeon has to think about the angle, the depth, the rotation of the tool relative to the surgical site. And the rotational movements are all reversed because they pass through this incision, which is like a pivot point. This is called the fulcrum effect, and it makes things quite unintuitive. Hence, we have the name Intuitive Surgical.
Interesting backstory to the name.
We'll come back to it. So in laparoscopic surgery, the surgeon might be manipulating two of these long instruments by hand while an aide holds the endoscope. That endoscope displays the surgical site on a screen for the team to look at. Also, the length of these tools amplify any little hand tremors that even the steadiest of hands might have. So that's bad for precision. And that's really a problem when you're trying to stitch paper-thin tissue of an artery, for example. The other thing to call out is this setup is physically very taxing on a surgeon. They've got their hands and their back in an awkward, uncomfortable position as they perform the procedure, and that might take hours to complete. If you talk to surgeons who have experience doing this, they'll tell you that after performing two prostatectomies, you need a physio. It's really hard work physically. And there's evidence out there which suggests that surgeons who do a load of LAP work over their career are forced to retire earlier because the toll this work takes on them, which normally manifests as back pain. The other drawback of laparoscopic surgery is visibility. So that is inferior to open procedures because the surgical site is not open. You need to illuminate it and use the camera to see what you're doing. So there are a lot of benefits, but there are some challenges as well. Now, this is where robotic surgery enters the timeline, really, Matt. Robotic surgery deals with a lot of the shortcomings of laparoscopic techniques. So the origins of this industry, if we go to the 1980s, the Stanford Research Institute developed a surgical robot, and that caught the eye of DARPA, the R&D agency of the US Defense Department. They were interested in the potential application of a surgeon performing remote surgery on a soldier. The idea was combine a robotic surgical system in a field operating theater with a skilled surgeon who sat tens or hundreds of miles away driving the procedure with a remote control and viewing system. Now, unfortunately, this application never took off, but the germ of the idea was there, and a young Intuitive Surgical began commercializing it in the mid-1990s. The first prototype was called Lenny, after young Leonardo da Vinci, and in 1998, the first model was released in Europe. They IPO'd in 2000 and received FDA approval for the da Vinci system for prostate surgery the same year. So that's the history.
You painted a nice picture there. If I'm to understand what is actually happening with the da Vinci system, is it actually using what you mentioned with the laparoscopic tools, but rather than putting a surgeon in place to use those tools, you're using a robotic arm? Is that the right way to understand what's happening?
Maybe the most useful thing to do is to paint the picture of how one of these procedures works. So to set the scene, a da Vinci system in an operating room consists of three main parts. You've got a surgeon console, which is where the surgeon sits a few feet away from the patient. They're looking through a viewfinder at what they're working on. They've got controls for each hand and controls for the feet, which they use to drive the robotic arms, control the instruments, and perform the procedure. What they're controlling is called the patient's sidecar. So this is the robot. And I would encourage people to image search this, and it really brings it to life. And that patient sidecar, that robot, includes three or four robotic arms, which hold surgical instruments and an endoscope vision system over the patient who's lying on the operating table. Finally, there's another part called the vision car that includes a display for the other operating room staff to view the procedure, to see what the surgeon sees. And that vision cart can also house some other technologies, electrosurgical tools, and things like that. So for the operation, a patient is under general anesthetic. Multiple keyhole incisions are made in the abdomen through which the surgical instrumentation is placed. And the surgeon is sat at their console controlling these instruments, looking through the vision system to see what's going on inside the patient's abdomen as they perform the procedure.
That makes sense. And I'm thinking about these early days for Intuitive Surgical in the digital world and the tech world. Facebook made move fast and break things, the popular motto there. In the medical world, that's not really a reasonable business plan. You have very little margin for error, and particularly as you're testing these machines. So can you talk about the early days in terms of getting adoption, whether there were major breakthroughs or just the evolution of the da Vinci system? And I'm curious how they won in this market, whether it's just being a first mover or anything else they were doing with their robotics that differentiated them.
So to be honest, how they opened up this market, as you've already alluded to, they had to come to market with something that was pretty much a working, reliable solution. There was a prototype we've talked about called Lenny. But that was developed to the point where it was suitably robust, reliable, intuitive to use, such that it could gain FDA clearance for use as a surgical tool in the indication, so initially in urology. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was a similar value proposition to what we see today, which is bringing all of the benefits of robotic surgery, and we'll go into exactly what those are in a second, bringing all of those in a fully formed, reliable form factor that they could actually start to go to hospitals and surgeons with and start to prove some value add and start to improve over laparoscopic surgery in a way that was suitably robust. And as you've said, you can't be breaking things and moving fast. You need it to be reliable, turning up, doing the same thing every day, and to be entirely counted upon.
Is this a market that requires regulatory approval? Was that a step in this process?
Yes. Intuitive have been very good at going around the world, talking to different healthcare regulators and getting what's known as an indication in the United States for use of their system for a specific procedure. So you get clearance for a given procedure type in a given geography. And so if you imagine the matrix of all the different soft tissue surgical procedures and all the different geographies in which Intuitive wants to play, they've done the hard yards of liaising with the regulator on each of those fronts to make sure they get clearance. I mentioned that in 2000, when they IPO'd, that was the same year they got clearance for urological procedures on the initial Da Vinci, and they've gone through other aspects of surgery. And they've had to do that each time they introduce a new robotic system, a new generation, latest iteration. They've had to go through and do that for each surgical type. And then they do that in Japan, in Europe, in the UK, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I'm sure that starts to compound in terms of the success that they've had and working through those regulatory hurdles. Obviously, there's an approval process each time, but each time you have a success story, I'm sure that's beneficial to future approvals. We talked a little bit about this is mostly being used for in terms of the soft tissue surgeries. You particularly mentioned around the abdomen. How big is the potential for robotic surgeries, just in terms of the total addressable market, which you referenced at the very beginning, and what this could possibly do in the future? What surgeries are just out of question where robotics could never do them? And then maybe what is the runway for future potential surgeries that maybe they haven't quite yet addressed?
Before we dive into the runway for growth, I think it's probably important to detail some of the benefits of robotic surgery, because that's really what you're unlocking when you're talking about unlocking these addressable markets. So we talked about the history in the 1990s, and that took us through to the IPO in 2000. But it's important to talk about the benefits. And the big fundamental advantage that robotic surgery has over laparoscopic techniques: dexterity and visibility. The value proposition to patients, to surgeons, to hospitals, to healthcare systems, payers, everyone, at a high level, those benefits are still what you're offering today. And that was what the value prop was in the early 2000s. So on the dexterity side, robotics is just so advantageous. Each arm of the robot can be moved through three dimensions, rotated, inserted, retracted. Additionally, the instruments are wristed, which means they have an additional pitch, roll, and yaw movement inside the patient's body. So that's a big difference with laparoscopic surgery, that wristed aspect of the instrument. And the surgeon has a great deal of control over the position and the angle of each instrument. I should say the arms of the robots are calibrated so that those rotations happen perfectly through the incision point. They mitigate that fulcrum effect, which was the really unintuitive part of lap surgery we mentioned earlier. So that's why it's highly intuitive, again, hence the name. Then there's the visibility aspect, and this is something that surgeons really, really appreciate if you talk to them. The Da Vinci Vision System includes dual cameras. So the endoscope has got two cameras on the end of it, and that means the procedure is viewed in 3D, which allows for depth perception, which is really, really important when you're looking at the anatomy inside of someone's abdomen and working on a procedure there. They're high resolution, so that lets the operative image be magnified. And this is why the surgeon sits at their surgical console and views the image through a 3D viewport at the console. So they've got a different image for each eye, and that allows that 3D depth perception. So compared to laparoscopic techniques, robotics gives greater dexterity, steadier, more accurate control of surgical instruments, advanced visuals, better surgeon ergonomics. Remember, I said it's painful to stand over a surgical table for hours. With a robotic system, they're sitting at an ergonomically designed console, not holding tools over a patient. And this is all in the pursuit of better patient outcomes, specifically less variability in the range of outcomes for patients, more reliable surgical outcomes. Remember, with open surgery, the actual procedure on the internal organ is less often the short-term risk than the big hole you have cut in your abdominal wall. And robotic surgery improves outcomes for patients in terms of length of recovery time, average length of stay in hospital, the amount of blood lost. The chances of needing intraoperative or perioperative blood transfusions is way lower with a robotic surgery procedure than an open one. So compared to laparoscopic, the likelihood of conversion, as in mid-procedure, reverting to an open technique, the likelihood is lower. The likelihood of readmission is lower. So it's not just for the surgeon's benefit. There's tons of patient benefits as well. So that's what robotic surgery is really delivering. And we've talked already about the size of the market and what the growth might look like. I suppose one of the key questions in understanding Intuitus's business is your question of what's the potential growth runway? And from an analyst's perspective, this is an amazing company to study. They give you lots of disclosure in terms of how many procedures are done, what type of procedure, what the installed base of robots is in different countries, what type of robot is shipped in a given quarter, and so on and so forth. The company are also very helpful in highlighting academic studies relevant to robotic surgery. And that serves as a great jumping off point into the question of growth and the growth runway ahead. So if you look through the academic literature very, very carefully at a whole range of different surgical procedures, you can start to get a sense of the propensity for robotic penetration to pick up in each of those different procedure types. You can see where the benefits really show up from a total cost of procedure perspective and where they're more marginal. The speed at which penetration picks up is obviously hard to know in advance, but it gives you a sense of what the true addressable market might be in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And in my view, it's important that you look at that as well as the headline figures of total number of procedures, total number of soft tissue procedures, and so forth. The work procedure by procedure really helps you understand how quickly penetration might move up the adoption curve. So the benefit of understanding things like that, I mean, understanding it to the degree that any non-medically trained investor can really understand these things, is you can disaggregate what's driving adoption forward. Is it, say, standardization among surgeons who trained on robots? Is it superior patient outcomes? Is it the superior experience for the surgeon? Is it the brand? Now, just because you do all that work, it doesn't necessarily mean that the future unfolds exactly as you've got it in the spreadsheet. And what's been really interesting is growth in procedures where previously you thought it was unlikely there was going to be a switch across to robotic surgery. If you talked a few years ago to some surgical department heads, they would have probably told you gallbladder removal, which is technically called a cholecystectomy, is unlikely to ever switch over en masse to robotics. And the reason is that there was not an incremental benefit relative to the incremental cost. It was a simple procedure that a less experienced surgeon might be able to perform quite quickly. But we've seen from the results of Intuitive that this is an area that has been driving growth within general surgery. And that, to me, is an indication of robotics becoming more standardized in many, many hospitals. Another thing that I'd probably highlight in terms of what's driving growth, and I've alluded to this, is the dynamic of new surgeons qualifying and older surgeons retiring and aging out of the population. Younger surgeons are way more likely to have trained on a robotic system. They've got a higher propensity for doing some or even all of their procedures on a robot. So that also helps growth. For those of you who had to summarize all the things that are driving growth forward, you'd list the surgeon preference for robotic surgery, especially the narrower range of outcomes for the patient, more reliability, as well as ergonomics. The evolution of surgeons towards younger cohorts who are likely to be trained in robotics. You've got an underlying growth in procedures, which coincides with rising geriatric populations, improving cancer screening initiatives and other things. You've got increasing applicability for robotics for new procedures as the evidence emerges of the benefits in those sub-procedure types. And then another one that's quite interesting, health systems in various places are looking towards outcomes-based approach to paying for surgery. So pay for performance is something that's picking up in the United States. And this aligns with the benefit of a total cost budgeting approach, which we'll come on to in a second. Intuitive's lowered the financial barriers to adopting robotic surgery as well with their flexible financing options. That's another growth driver I'd point to.
You hit on a lot there, and I want to start shifting towards the business model in a bit, but you were referencing some of the academic papers that have come out and some of the studies done on robotic surgeries. And one of the interesting things that I came across in my research was in the early 2010s, there was this negative thesis. You had a stock that was extremely expensive. And what seemed to be the case was that the data didn't necessarily point towards robotic surgeries having much difference in terms of outcome. But it was mostly that surgeons like to use it and that it was almost a marketing tool for some of these centers that they could market to potential patients. So it was very much driven by the demand, more so based on evidence that it was better. Can you talk about how that's evolved over time? That was very much a place in time 10 plus years ago. But just in terms of what you were referencing there and the growth, you still mentioned surgeons' interest in using it, patients' desire to have robotics work with it, which are two very important things and major drivers. But how much of it is actually backed by data?
That's a really good perspective to maybe talk about the trade-offs and the perceived trade-offs of robotic surgery. So I mentioned some of the benefits, which you could broadly summarize as narrower range of outcomes, more reliable outcomes for patients. But there are trade-offs. And the big one that's often cited is cost. And the upfront price of a robotic system might be $1.5 million, which is amortized over its useful life, 6 or 7 years, say, 200 or 300 procedures per year. Plus, you've got to pay for instrumentation, which on average, $1,800 per procedure. Now, you might say, Matt, those figures sound excessively expensive, and that's not an unreasonable thing to say. But the pushback is, it's not about cost, it's about value. Now, that sounds a little cliched, but with robotic surgery, it's really important to consider a more holistic budgeting approach. And if one considers direct and indirect costs of a procedure, then robotic surgery starts to look quite good value, despite the high headline costs. So lots of academic studies have actually done a terrific job of analyzing the holistic costs for different procedure types. And this talks to the demand beyond just surgeons and the brand wanting to use these robotic systems. So if you look at the prostatectomy, which is the single procedure where robotic penetration is the highest, the cost of surgical equipment for a robotic procedure is 4 times higher than the equipment needed for an open procedure, and twice that of a laparoscopic procedure. But the cost of the subsequent stay in hospital is lower if you go with the robotic option. The cost of recurrence treatment is lower. The risk of distant metastasis and the associated treatment is lower. The cost of palliative care is lower. The all-in cost, once you account for the related indirect costs of a treatment, is lower for the robotic option while carrying the other benefits that we talked about earlier. Another way you can frame this point, I suppose, is to point out that direct supplies are typically the smallest component of a procedure cost, a long way behind wages and other indirect costs once you account for the cost of the OR, depreciation of the building, other equipment. These benefits and relative costs obviously vary from one procedure to another, and that's another important consideration when you think about that matrix of the growth runway across different procedure types and geographies. The other trade-off I'd mention, it's worth being transparent on it, is procedure time. So several procedures actually take longer on a robot than they do laparoscopically. And this is because a significant amount of time when using a robot is the docking and undocking process. So that needs to be taken account into the cost measure as well, the cost of the OR time and staff. But perhaps the surgeon isn't needed for the whole time. The surgeon can join for the procedure once the instrumentation is in place and the robot is docked. But it's a consideration as well. And this goes to another question you asked in terms of areas where robotics is less likely to be used. The extra undocking time also carries another risk. If something goes wrong, it's slow to get the robot undocked and out of the way and for surgeons to get to work on whatever life-saving intervention they need to do, like stopping bleeding. And this is part of the reason why robotics is not widely used in most cardiothoracic surgery. It's too dangerous to have this undocking slowing you down if something goes wrong with the lungs or the heart mid-operation. Whereas if you puncture a hole in the bladder, the patient isn't going to die right away. They can undock the robot and then set about fixing the mistake. So this academic work and documenting the value add across different surgical types and the cost and benefit is what hospitals look for and surgeons look for when they're thinking about adopting robotics. It's not just the allure of the brand and the latest, greatest technology.
Very interesting to hear about some of those trade-offs and not even things that I would consider just in terms of the docking and the undocking and the time to set up. I did want to touch on the point about market size and whether there's any evidence that it actually expands the market for procedures. I could potentially make the case that I might be more willing to do a procedure if there was a surgical robot doing the work rather than just certainly being cut fully open and potentially relative to laparoscopic. But is there any data or evidence that it's actually expanding the market of procedures done because of the interest in using it?
I don't think it's fair to assume that's the central case, because many of the procedures where this is being done in urology and gynecology, for example, are not benign procedures. And so these are not something where the patient has the luxury of waiting and choosing between surgery or not. Normally, these more serious requirements, and therefore there's going to be a surgical procedure undertaken, and there's a greater comfort involved in what you get with the robot and the narrower range of outcomes and the steadier, greater control over the procedure which the surgeon gets. I don't think it's quite fair to say it's expanding the market from that perspective.
I appreciate when a guest will push back on something that might otherwise be a bullish or positive thesis. So I appreciate the pushback on that point. We can transition a bit into the Da Vinci system and how that's evolved. I think you referenced there just in terms of the upfront cost and the useful life, which you mentioned 6 years, but maybe we just start with the Da Vinci system and the evolution over the time frame since being introduced. Is this something where we have Da Vinci 1, Da Vinci 2? How do updates come into play? What do those look like? Maybe just a little bit about the Da Vinci system itself.
Sure. So since the 1999-2000 time, Intuitive have introduced four generations. So exactly as you say, you've got Da Vinci 1, Da Vinci 2. And actually earlier this year, they announced their fifth generation has been submitted to the FDA. And the new versions, the new systems, they bring new features, they bring improvements on all the things we've already discussed. The vision systems get better, the degrees of motion get improved, they integrated operating table motion and so on. There were also some feature sets were introduced, which I think are quite important junctures in the story of Da Vinci and its competitive landscape, I suppose. Now, if you were to think the emerging competitive threat to the incumbent surgical tools market, that Intuitive was growing robotic surgery and it was taking share from laparoscopic, taking share from open procedures. If you were to think all of that growth was unknown or unknowable to the incumbents that were being somewhat disrupted, then you might be surprised to hear this. Up until 2014, there was no stapling instrumentation from Intuitive. So surgical stapling is a common method for closing up work that's been done in the operation, in the procedure. And prior to the launch of stapling tools by Intuitive, surgeons had been standing up from their Da Vinci console, scrubbing into the procedure, and then carrying out the stapling using a tool from another provider. There was a similar story for energy systems. So you have tools such as vessel sealers, and Intuitive first introduced those just over 10 years ago. Prior to that, like with stapling, surgeons were getting up from the console, scrubbing in, and using a third-party electrosurgical tool to coagulate and cut or seal tissue. So Intuitive didn't have the whole procedure covered in the early days. Its systems were being used in hybrid with other surgical tool providers. And in my mind, that was a bit of a missed opportunity by the competitors. They should have seen this growth in robotic surgery, seen that surgeons were embracing it as the future, and of course, seized on the fact that Intuitive at the time did not have all of the bases covered. They only provided the simpler tools and were being supplemented by third-party staplers and vessel sealers and energy systems. But Intuitive worked left as the sole player of robotics through most of the 2010s. And during that time, they developed, launched stapling and energy systems. Plus, they demonstrated the effectiveness and the reliability of those tools. If you're a surgeon, you don't use a stapler unless you trust it 100%. You don't want to be having a readmission, opening a patient back up to fix a burst staple or a failed staple. And an unproven Intuitive stapling system took a few years to be accepted. Today, those stapling and energy tools, which were new introductions 10 years ago, are now classed as advanced instruments. And these contributed more than $1 billion of revenue in 2023. So a meaningful contributor from these later developments, the advanced instruments. And then if you think about upgrades through the generations of the Da Vinci system, replacement and upgrade cycles, these were actually arguably of greater importance to the fundamentals of the business trajectory a few years ago. So previously, a new robot would be announced. They'd go from generation 3 to 4. This would spur an upgrade cycle, supporting capital placements, as in robotic placements. But Intuitive have de-risked the product cycle nature of their business model in two important ways. One is they've started to offer leasing, and two, they've offered upgrade clauses in the agreements they've got with hospitals. And this de-risks the potential for volatility in their own business, as hospital placements should now be smoother, and it de-risks for the hospital the decision of having to worry about buying a robot just before a new generation gets announced and your new purchase becomes obsolete. So that's the story of introductions over the last 2 decades. The only other thing I would mention on new offerings is, in addition to the Da Vinci ecosystem, more recently, Intuitive have developed and unveiled a second product group called Ion. And this is what's called an endoluminal system, which at the moment is used for minimally invasive biopsies in the lung or bronchoscopies. Most people are probably familiar with this, but why do we carry out bronchoscopies? Well, lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death, unfortunately, and 25% of all cancer deaths are represented by lung cancer. So it's a big problem, and the survival rate on lung cancer is low, partly because of late-stage diagnosis. And survival rates can improve a lot with early diagnosis and treatment. So every year, millions of people have chest radiographs and CT scans, and sometimes nodules are detected in the lungs in those scans. The problem is, most of the time, those nodules are in hard-to-reach peripheral parts of the lungs, and traditional bronchoscopy techniques give you pretty limited access to those areas, and that's often where lung cancers first develop. So pulmonologists who work in this field have a dilemma on their hands. They want to detect the cancer as early as possible, and that means taking biopsies of smaller, earlier nodules, but there's a greater probability of a small nodule being benign. So you need to balance the probabilistic safety. They're hesitant of checking every single nodule with a traditional transthoracic needle biopsy if that risks collapsing a lung, especially when early nodules are more likely to be benign. So there's a huge unmet need for an easy, safe, less invasive bronchoscopy that can navigate, you could call it, tortuous anatomy of the lung and accurately biopsy these small lesions. And that's what the Ion system does. It's a super thin, 3.5 millimeter diameter, flexible, robotic bronchoscope. And that can be used to navigate the lungs and find these areas in question for biopsy. Interestingly, Intuitive share this market for flexible bronchoscopies with J&J, with their Monarch offering. So the competitive position is a little less dominant than in the main business. But these flexible bronchoscopy tools are growing very, very quickly. From next to nothing in 2019, Intuitive's Ion systems did 54,000 procedures last year, and the installed base has grown 10x in 3 years. So that's an example of another product group, another innovation, which is still minimally invasive, still robotic surgery, answering a significant unmet need, and talks to the innovation going on at Intuitive.
Yeah, the possibilities are just fascinating in terms of non-invasive surgeries and what it can potentially do when you mix that with advanced innovation and monitoring and detection as well. You hit on a very interesting point on the revenue model. I was very curious to get into this. When you presumably have a system that you're updating, to your point, once every 6 years or so, that can create some type of volatility, cyclicality, not much visibility. When you mentioned transitioning a bit towards leasing the equipment and offering those upgrades, I imagine there's some type of maintenance slash service line here. But can you break down just the revenue buckets, however you or the company would break them down?
Sure. So maybe just to remind people of the scope in terms of robots and then how that flows through to revenue. So last year, Intuitive placed just shy of 1,400 of these systems, the Da Vinci systems. And that generated $1.6 billion of revenue. Once you strip out some of the moving parts, the system ASP is $1.4 to $1.5 million. And there's currently an installed base of 8,500 of these robots globally. But the larger part of the business from a revenue perspective is the sale of instruments, accessories, and these sales are the ones tied to procedure volumes. I've mentioned there's in 2023, there were 2.3 million procedures performed on Da Vinci, and the instruments shipped to enable these procedures generated over $4 billion of revenue. So the simple math tells you that Intuitive are earning about $1,900 of instrument revenue per procedure. And then exactly to your point, there's additionally some servicing revenue attached to the systems and the installed base, which generated around $1 billion last year. So the revenue breakdown is $7 billion total last year, 60% of which is instruments, 25% of which is system revenue, and the remainder is servicing. One thing to say, which you hit on exactly correctly, about the systems revenue, the robots, is on leasing, which we've touched on. Intuitive offer the ability for the hospitals to de-risk that capital budgeting decision by offering the robotic system on a lease. And what that means from a financial model perspective is the robots ship to the hospital, but it sits on Intuitive's balance sheet at cost as a line of PP&E. And then it's depreciated over its useful life. Meanwhile, the lease payments, operating lease payments, get booked as revenue into the accounts. Now, those lease payments might be fixed on a per month, per quarter basis, or they might be usage based. And then with the latter, the payments are really tied to procedure volumes, but then the hospital would be contractually locked into some minimal usage level. And so the risk of idle robots isn't entirely borne by Intuitive.
When you think about the drivers and maybe the mix shifts, is it getting more of these systems into the market? Do you expect that percentage to shift in terms of what that service line represents as a percentage of total revenue? How do you think about the drivers there? You can make the case that it's either more procedures done, which would drive that service revenue to the extent that it's usage-based, or that it's simply more penetration, more selling into the market.
I think the way to think about how the revenue model unfolds over time is that it's all led by procedures. And so as Intuitive demonstrate the efficacy of robotic surgery, and they bring incremental innovation and bring new features and tools and so on, then you're going to see more and more procedures done on Da Vinci systems. And that flows through to an installed base over time, which has grown relatively monotonically as well, albeit the install base has grown slower than the procedure number. The balancing part of that equation is utilization has grown. So the number of procedures per year has gone up. Suppose you could say that the service revenue per procedure has gone down, but Intuitive would be very happy with that. They know that it's all about unlocking the maximum amount of value from a given robotic system and the associated service. And that means driving procedure penetration. So it waterfalls down from procedure volume, install base volume, the associated revenue of systems and services.
You referenced a bit about depreciation schedule, useful life. In reality, are these systems used beyond 6 years? Is there a secondary market for them? If you were to have some type of downturn in the economy, could you see some of the customers maybe sweating the assets a bit more, extending the life of those systems? How much does that play a role?
It plays a role to some degree, although once a hospital or a customer starts really getting decent utilization out of a robot, then there are so many other costs associated with a given procedure that the depreciation of a single procedure of that robotic system starts to be smaller. And this is, again, a point about the brilliant disclosure that Intuitive give you. You do get given the number of trade-in systems. So while they ship new systems, they also take trade-ins from the market. So they might be older robots, the previous generation. They might be retired, or if they've still got some useful life and they need some upgrades and maintenance, they might actually be shipped out at lower ASP to other parts of the world, which maybe can't support the latest, greatest, most expensive model, but maybe have an appetite for still the benefits that you get at a lower ASP. So you get some trade-in, and maybe in an era of economic weakness, you get some delayed purchase of the new system. But certainly in certain parts of the world, the US being the biggest market for Intuitive, surgery and these procedures tends to be margin accretive, and you don't need to necessarily think about over squeezing your asset or running it longer than you ideally should, because there's revenue attached to the procedure, and as we've said, a big portion of the costs are the other parts, the labor, the building, and the instruments and accessories as well.
And for Intuitive themselves, thinking about the cost line, the investment, R&D, CapEx, whatever it might be, how much variance is there from year to year in the margin profile of that business, and then the ultimate free cash flow of the business as well?
So the headline is that the business earns around about 70% gross margin, which is actually quite similar across product revenue and service revenue. The product side sometimes dips down a little bit when they're scaling up a new offering. So Ion at the moment, that endoluminal system I talked through, that's currently not running at a large manufacturing capacity or at scale, but it's growing quickly. So that can pull down the gross margin a little in the short term as that scales into its manufacturing footprint. But generally, high 60s is where the GAAP gross margin sits, and a bit higher for adjusted gross margin. I should also point out that the leasing setup that we've mentioned, the associated revenue and depreciation expense of the robot that's on a lease, drops through at the same gross margin as an outright sale. If you move down the P&L to operating expenses, Intuitive spends in the region of 14% of sales on R&D, and then 26, 27% of sales on SG&A. That's on a GAAP basis. So you're looking at a high 20s, low 30s GAAP operating margin. And depending on how you like accounting for stock-based comp, the adjusted operating margin is 7, 8, 9 percentage points higher. But yeah, exactly to your point, what does that mean for cash? Well, historically, this was simply a simple sales business: sell the robot to the hospitals, then sell instruments and accessories, and you get a pretty predictable attach rate on services. And the market used to actually focus on capital spending, to your point earlier, as this drove incremental installs. Now, the introduction of leasing breaks that link somewhat between hospital CapEx cycles and sales momentum of Da Vinci, and that gives greater forecastability, but there is a trade-off, which is cash conversion of leasing. So the accounting treatment I mentioned, the system being capitalized up front and sitting on the balance sheet while you don't get the revenue until it flows in over time, that acts as a drag on cash conversion, but not a detrimental one. And in my view, it improves the relationship and the stickiness with the hospitals and the overall business health. So even once you've taken that into account, a fairly limited amount of CapEx, albeit it's slightly higher at the moment as they build out manufacturing facilities, this business still produces a ton of cash, even with that marginal drag from leasing.
Very interesting. And when you think about the R&D expense as well as CapEx, how much of that is going into new systems like Ion versus maintaining the existing business? Is a lot of cash being spent on more innovation? I know it's hard to separate maintenance a little bit when Da Vinci's consistently being updated, but I am curious about that.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to parse out because you don't get given that broken out. But the company have told the market that not only have they been working on the fifth generation for many years, which they've now announced this year has been submitted to the FDA, but they've also had the sixth generation in development, as well as the Ion system. There's also a single port version of Da Vinci, which I didn't go into detail on, but that involves all the instrumentation through a single incision in the abdominal wall. So they've been developing new systems like that relatively regularly and updating things. But maybe somewhere I would touch on where their R&D engine has really been put to work, especially in recent years, and that's digital capability. So that's been much more of a focus of their development efforts, and they've shipped and are shipping a more comprehensive set of digital tools, if you like, in the last few years. And the premise is that they've been capturing a ton of high quality data relating to all the procedures done on their systems, which are all high tech cloud connected systems, by the way. And you can, I suppose, bucket these tools into three camps. So these tools are aiding pre-op planning, interoperative guidance, and then post-op analytics. So if you think about the pre-op side, surgeons, consultants, they can use 3D models of a patient's anatomy taken from a diagnostics tool, and then they can use that to plan the operation. So you end up with a kind of augmented reality for the procedure. You also have a simulation software, so surgeons can work on their robotic surgery skills in a simulated environment. So you've got these different digital tools pre-op. In terms of intraoperative guidance, as well as the 3D model, the augmented reality being there from that planning stage, there's also something called intuitive telepresent, which is, they describe it as a HIPAA-compliant FaceTime. So you can have proctoring of the procedure live, but digitally. And then finally, post-op tools. Some of these are actually still in prototype. But these tools would let the surgeon or the hospital or the head of the surgical department maybe do analysis on a procedure after it's been concluded. So there's a tool called Case Insights, which compares your procedure to a huge sample of similar procedures and shows the surgeon where they did really well, where they could have done better. There's also a portal for the hospital to monitor their usage of instruments, usage of the robotic systems, resource planning, and so on. So it all makes their robotics department within the hospital more efficient. So that's somewhere where they've been focusing their efforts in recent years. Those digital tools have been taking an increasing share of R&D spend.
When you start to think about competition, I think you alluded to with Ion, there's more of a natural competitor with J&J in that market. Maybe we focus on the Da Vinci system itself, competition in that market. It seems like what you referenced, they have about 10% of the share in that market today. Is that something that you expect to continue to grow in terms of them continuing to gain market share? And are there any major competitive threats in terms of companies putting major investments for a competitive product that exists today?
They've got essentially 100% market share in robotic surgery, but the market is maybe only 10% penetrated. And at this point, Intuitive have grown quite a big, profitable business, and so it is attracting some competition. For context, there was a legitimate competitor in the early days called Computer Motion. Back in the 1990s, it was founded specifically to develop surgical robots, borrowing NASA technology. And they did a really good job with their Zeus surgical robotic system. And in fact, they sued Intuitive in 1998 for patent infringement. After 5 years of litigation, the two companies merged under the name Intuitive Surgical. And for much of the time since then, Intuitive have been pushing forward this market alone. The competitors that are entering the market today can be broadly grouped into two buckets. On one hand, you've got large legacy surgical tools businesses looking to defend their business as the world moves increasingly towards robotics. And then on the other hand, you've got smaller startups seeking the promised land occupied by Intuitive, a big business, high margins, high returns on capital, and so forth. On the first group, there's almost something of a syllogism where one of the big diversified medical device businesses like Medtronic, for example, says, we're in surgical tools. Robotic surgery is a bright spot in surgical tools. We should do robotic surgery. And I'm not sure that's the right mindset as a starting point to really make something innovative that surgeons really want to use. Medtronic are not particularly focused on robotic surgery. It's one product line of many within one of their four divisions. Now, they have a product in the market, and I'm sure they will get some traction, but by definition, it doesn't get the same level of focus up and down the organization as what Intuitive give to their robotic surgery business. So maybe it's worth asking, how robust is Intuitive's competitive position? Well, they're technology leaders. They have learnings from 25 years of research and billions of dollars of cumulative R&D spend. They've now announced their fifth generation robot, and the latest versions encapsulate a ton of electromechanical engineering know-how, software development, and so on. Meanwhile, their would-be competitors are only coming to the market now or in the last couple of years. So you could argue they've got some catching up to do. The second thing I'd point to is FDA approvals. To go to market with a level of scale that's attractive enough to be considered by hospitals and healthcare systems, your robotic system, it needs to have sufficient regulatory clearances. Intuitive have done the hard yards of getting clearances for different procedure types in different countries. It's a slow process to go through and build that up. Finally, I'd point to Intuitive having nurtured their ecosystem quite deliberately over the last 20 years. They've got a highly engaged install base at this point of surgeons, of hospitals, heads of surgical departments, academic groups. Each part of the value chain is bought into Da Vinci, and hospitals are very hesitant to change their surgical robotics provider. Surgeons don't want to learn a new system. Administrators have built resourcing workflows and budgeting processes around the Da Vinci. Also, Intuitive have offered leasing, which lowers the financial burden of making the decision on buying a robot. The length of time they've been in the market means there exists a vast amount of data on the 14 million Da Vinci procedures that have been done to date. And that data feeds into developing digital tools, it feeds into R&D, and it feeds into clinical evidence. I mean, there have been 38,000 peer-reviewed academic articles published to date relevant to robotic surgery. There have been 3,000 in the last year alone. And the vast majority of these are done independent of Intuitive. Surgeons don't adopt these robots purely on the basis of better ergonomics and a compelling sales pitch from the salesperson. They want to know that the benefits that we've talked about play out in reality, and they want to see clinical evidence of that. Surgeons can look at the independent studies, they can look at meta-analyses, they can gauge the pros and cons of adopting robotics into their scenarios, and the body of evidence is a huge barrier to entry. So a new system comes to market, there's no way a doctor simply assumes what happened in a Da Vinci system happens in the new one. And you get this quite virtuous cycle. R&D investments get a workable system that gets approved by the FDA. You ship that to a wide enough install base that are engaged using the system. The procedures being done generate a ton of data that feeds the academic work. It proves out the efficacy of your system and it feeds back into R&D. I think Intuitive have been quite careful about improving their relationship with all of these aspects. They've been there for a long time. They're focused on robotic surgery and they live and die by the success of that business alone. So I feel quite comfortable with the competitive position, but it's fair to say there are people entering the market and I'm sure they'll gain some traction. This is a large, fast-growing market. There's lots of space to innovate and more than one player can succeed here.
On the geographical opportunity, what does their market exposure look like in the U.S. relative to the international opportunity? And is that a key area for growth, expanding abroad versus further expanding in the U.S.?
It definitely is an area for growth. It's a challenging thing to analyze. The data that comes from the United States, health systems, and the academic literature is really great at painting a picture of the potential growth runway there. And it's obviously more challenging to do it across a couple of hundred other countries where the disclosure is more patchy. But there's definitely a growth runway there. And some of the things that Intuitive has done in recent years have obviously lowered the barriers to adoption. So extending the life of the instrument, so it reduces the per procedure costs, offering leasing, the potential for traded-in systems to be then shipped out at a lower ASP. So there are a number of things that Intuitive are doing to broaden out that international market. Obviously, the international market is not a monolith, and some countries spend a lot on healthcare and recognize the benefits of total cost budgeting, thinking about the value versus just the headline cost. And then in other countries, the healthcare systems are more stretched financially, and therefore adoption of something that's perceived to be expensive is more challenging. So there's definitely a long runway there. And the fact that Intuitive's business is still 2/3 US, 1/3 ex-US, while obviously the population and the number of procedures that are being done ex-US, even in the richer countries in the world with well-developed healthcare systems, if you just look at the penetration in OECD countries, there's clearly a long runway there. And I think Intuitive do a terrific job of carefully liaising with local regulators, local surgical associations, local healthcare groups in different countries around the world, extolling the virtues of what they do, and then working with those different systems to see what they can bring to the market in terms of clearances and demonstrable efficacy and so on and so forth. They're very, very disciplined at going through those different cells from a procedure country perspective.
I think we've done a very good job laying out the continued opportunity for growth here. As you think about the risks for this business, we touched a little bit just on competitive threats or how much we want to view competition as a threat. What else would you point to in terms of risks for this business?
If you characterize robotic surgery as disrupting other forms of surgery, it's fair to say the flow of disruption is not one way. And in fact, Intuitive have been actually on the receiving end of some disruption in one small corner of their business. And this has been actually quite a focus for people who follow Intuitive over the last few quarters. And that's GLPs being the weight loss disruptor in bariatric surgery. So last year, 2023, we heard a lot about GLP-1s and numerous studies read out. As a result, lots of companies felt the impact of the market anticipating disruption to their business model. Some of this was obviously very direct. The direct diabetes businesses felt it probably the most severely, but even snacks businesses, obviously people anticipating disruption there. There were also some more indirect impacts felt from the advent of GLP-1s being more widely adopted. Intuitive's impact is actually quite direct, albeit it's small in the overall mix of their business. And robotic systems are used for bariatrics procedures, which you use to treat morbid obesity and therefore the secondary effects such as diabetes. GLP-1 type drugs obviously offer a substitution here. If you're morbidly obese, if you're at risk of diabetes or suffering from diabetes, there's a substitution. And understandably, patients are deferring surgery while they assess the options of GLPs. Surgery is seen as a more drastic option. And so people are taking pause while they assess the new options that have been brought to the table more recently. There's two things I'd probably call out to consider here. One, the deferral might occur for a year or two while the patient tries GLP-1s, but we know that longer term, levels of adherence to these drugs are not widely known. We don't have super high confidence bars as to the level of adherence across different patient populations yet. So there is at least some likelihood that bariatric surgery might, down the line, supplement GLP-1s as an aid to longer term weight loss and diabetic health. Two, maybe something that's not immediately obvious, but some morbidly obese patients are considered too high risk to operate on for other non-bariatric procedures. So if GLP-1s actually allow weight loss, they potentially expand the addressable market for surgery. People that were previously not eligible and their doctors deemed them too high risk for surgery, and that potentially expands the market again for robotic surgery. So while Intuitive are fairly sanguine about the impact of GLP-1s on their business, one could argue that this is the canary in the coal mine for surgery, or maybe that's too extreme a metaphor, but one generally could get more worried if you thought that pharmacological healthcare improvements over time reduce the need for surgery. As we improve biologic drugs, personalized medicine, improve diagnostics, bring down cost of gene sequencing, all these things where there's been tons of innovation, do those developments erode the need for surgery? If broadly surgery is typically a more drastic solution than pharma-based healthcare, then advances in all of those things are certainly something to monitor. But overall, I think the way Intuitive manage this business very carefully, very deliberately, no rash decisions, means they're pretty well set to navigate whatever it is that other healthcare innovations throw up. But it's an interesting one to monitor.
If you weren't mentioning Ozempic as one of the risks, I was going to ask you about it. So I'm glad that you jumped on that for me. As we finish out these conversations, we always try to pull out lessons that we can look out from a broader level and maybe apply them across your investing framework. What lesson stands out to you from Intuitive Surgical?
I think the biggest lesson for me is the benefit of focus. And it goes back to that competition points as well. I think a preconceived notion that in healthcare, M&A often makes sense because, of course, if you can broaden out your product offering, which you sell into an existing customer set, then you get huge cost synergies. This has led to quite large, quite diversified businesses, and the incremental products you acquire don't require any additional sales force, so they accrete to incremental margins. And if you look at the landscape of public companies, there are some successful operators obviously using that playbook, but there are also some cases where innovation is maybe lacking in lots of parts of the portfolio, not to the detriment of the whole business, but you get pockets where innovation is lacking. And a lack of focus is something to do with it, in my view. There are huge returns to focus. And this, I think, especially is true when you're selling to clinicians. They're professionals who value genuine innovation, they value reliability, they value improved clinical outcomes, much more so than the benefit of dealing with less providers. So maybe in some pockets of, I don't know, life sciences or other medical supplies where the procurement decision is being made by someone closer to the budgeting process, the diversified model makes sense. But for Intuitive, they just do surgical robots, driven by, they've got this vision that minimally invasive surgery can deliver better outcomes for their stakeholders. And by focusing singularly on this aim, they've developed the robotic surgery market basically out of scratch, and they've made a huge success of it over time.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I was going to remark something about them competing with giants in this world, but at $140 billion market cap, I think it's fair to consider them to be one of those giants. So a very excellent point in terms of the value of focus. And when you can truly create a market, the opportunity is endless. This has been an excellent conversation, Joe. I appreciate you not only introducing us to Intuitive Surgical, but also into the broader world of robotics in the surgical market. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.
To find more episodes of Breakdowns ranging from Costco to Visa to Moderna, or to sign up for our weekly summary, check out joincolossus.com. That's JOINCOLOSSUS.com.
A quick note before you go. If you are a company hiring or a candidate looking for your next opportunity, make sure to check out joincolossus.com/recruiting. We launched our recruiting efforts at the end of last year. We started working with firms that were interested in tapping into our audience. And after seeing some early success, we want to open this up to additional firms and to candidates who are proactively looking for their next opportunity. So we are mostly revolving around the investment world and the tech industry. But again, make sure to check out joincolossus.com/recruiting for more information.